And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, good.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for doing this.
Sure. Yeah, my pleasure.
It's Meryl.
Meryl? Like Meryl Streep.
Okay, cool. All right. I didn't limit. So you're Meryl Opsahl.
Opsahl.
Did I get the Opsahl part right?
Opsahl.
Okay, great. And you came to me through your brother, who seems like a really, really cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
And he knows a drummer that I know.
Okay.
And that drummer knows my wife's cancer story.
Okay.
And so he thought you would be fantastic. And then I listened to your podcast, which we'll get into, and wow.
Oh, thank you.
No, wow. I couldn't do that in 100 million years. I really don't think I could.
Yeah, I didn't do it alone. I did it with my husband. So I couldn't personally do it by myself in 100 million years, but together with my husband, we did it.
Let's figure that part out first. See, so, okay, I get that you overcame, hold on, stage 3C triple negative breast cancer.
Yes.
That's a big accomplishment. I get that you are, you run a business,
it's a education consulting business.
Education consulting business. That's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And you have a teaching license, right?
I have my master's degree in early childhood and childhood education. Yeah.
That's an accomplishment. But the biggest thing you've done is actually work together with your husband. I couldn't do that with my wife.
Yeah, I was wondering if we were going to talk about that.
Let's lead. Yeah. Let's lead with that. That's probably the biggest story. Let's lead with that.
Yeah, because it's rare for people to be able to work so closely in a creative capacity with their spouse or actually with anybody. It's a very vulnerable thing to let somebody comment on your creative work and change it, you know? And so really, the beginning of that journey was when I was in graduate school and I threw my back out. And I had a paper due and I could not sit up at my desk to type my paper. And so my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, I dictated the paper to him lying on my back on ice and he typed the paper up for me.
Holy cow.
A little, grammatical comments here and there. Oh, maybe because he's a writer. Maybe do this, maybe do that. And, that was really the first time that we ever wrote together. I mean, it was my paper. It was really all of my words, but it was just like the first little whisper of collaboration. And I think also just dating him as I was going through grad school and my graduate school, Bank Street College of Education, they don't do testing. They only do papers. So he saw the amount of words that I was writing and the quality of that writing. I did really, really well in graduate school. I loved writing. So he really came to respect me as a peer, a writing peer. You know, so this is someone that can also write. So that was really like the foundation. And then really nothing much else happened with it until he got the spark of an idea for his first novel, Lifecast. And that came to him while we were on vacation in Palm Springs, horseback riding. And horseback riding is honestly a terrible date. I don't know if you've ever tried to go on a horseback riding date, but you're like lined up. You can't talk. So he does what writers do. He was off in La La Land imagining things. And on the drive home, it was maybe 3-hour drive home. This is before we had children. So we were able to, you know, actually have an adult conversation. On the drive home, he was telling me all about his ideas and I was giving him feedback and kind of like sort of bouncing off of his ideas. And what about this? What about that? And when he came, once we got back into town, he just like hit the ground running and started writing that book. And then my first son was born and he had, do you have children?
I have one daughter. She's 16. She's going to be 17 next month.
So if you can remember 17 years ago when she was first born, the witching hour, the witching hour, which is never an hour, you know, where right. Newborn babies just won't stop crying for an hour or two in the evening. We used to just put my older son, we used to just put Jasper in the stroller and we have a beautiful neighborhood. So we would just walk with him because if he was moving, he wouldn't be crying. So every day for 2 hours, we would be walking around the neighborhood and my husband would tell me everything he wrote that day. And I would give him feedback or, you know, just kind of bounce the ideas off of him. And then he would tell me about what he thinks was going to happen next. And so that's really how we started working together. Then when the first draft of Lifecast was done, he asked me if I would edit the book.
Wow.
And yeah. And so, while Mark also had a day job at the time. So while he was at his day job and my son was napping, I would sit on our balcony and I would read a chapter a day and write notes. And then at night we would sit down and I would give him the notes.
Wow.
Now, at first it wasn't just like easy peasy because at first my husband had, you know, his prickles up, you know, like he didn't want to hear anything about his writing, you know? And so I kind of just knowing him really well and being gentle and being a teacher, just kind of very gently worked in my ideas and kind of giving him, you know, gentle guidance. And we would get into fights and, you know, it would get fiery, but I would push through because I believed in the project and because I really wanted to be involved in this. So I pushed through and we kept, you know, and he pushed through too and just trying to open himself up to my ideas. And it was really hard. It was really, really hard. There would be times where he'd go, no, I'm not doing that. And then I would patiently explain and he'd go, yeah, okay, that's a good idea. That's fine. It's a good idea. and I don't want to take away like, you know, this is his book. He's got the byline. I was just the editor, but it was really how we first started collaborating and how he first really came, I think, to respect my input and my ideas and see that they worked well with him and his ideas. And so we went through several rounds of editing and, you know, several drafts and, that book was finally published in 2022. And, I would encourage, you know, if you enjoyed the story of Captain Charlotte, that style of writing, I mean, it's a completely different genre, but it's written by Mark, edited by me. So you should check out Lifecast. It's called Lifecast.
Okay. Amazon.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon. And actually, I'm propping my computer up with a copy if you want to see.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. So it's the first book in a trilogy, but we haven't had time to write the other two books. So
you've been a little busy.
Yeah, we've been a little bit busy. But it was one of Kirkus Reviewed's, one of the top 100 independent novels of 2022 or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's won prizes and awards and stuff. It's really good. It's a really, really good book. We're
going to Amazon after this.
So, yeah. And so that was really how we started collaborating and how he really like kind of let me into his creative process.
I can't imagine. Just, I'll tell you a story back. Ready? So my daughter's 16. She's applying to colleges. And the college essay is a big thing. I too am a writer. The college essay is a big thing. So my wife says, you know, she's not doing the essay. So my wife hires a college coach. Around here, that's what you do. I didn't have one, but apparently that's what you do. So she hires this college coach. And this college coach is going to write my daughter's essay for, which is stupid because my daughter is cum laude and a great writer. And I'm fighting it the whole time. But for some reason, she's blocked on writing the essay, right? Mm-hmm. And I've written a couple of books too. So I have some cred. So I get to, so the college coach sends her essay in, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, this is AI. There's no way this is an AI.
No.
And if it isn't AI, then wow, you're not a writer. And it's supposed to be written by a 16-year-old girl, and I swear to God, it almost had the word whilst in it. I'm like, no. So I write an essay, and I say, look, here's the way I think it should be, and I write a draft of her college essay. The story ends well. So my wife's a third grade teacher. So she knows in a good district. So she knows guidance counselor. She has friends with a guidance counselor. She goes in and she says, okay, here are two essays. Which do you like better? The guidance, high school guidance counselor, whose job it is to get kids into college, says, I like this one better, which turned out to be mine. Then my daughter said, which is cool, but then my daughter says, rightly so, I want to write it. Now she's got skin in the game. So now she writes an essay. We do it together. It's great. I then give it to she who hired the college coach, and college coach used AI to write the essay. And she starts, I call it penny editing, when somebody says, like, you know, I don't think you should use the word A, or, you know, just an edit that is just not theme, not sentence structure, not just edit for the sake of editing. It almost ended a 26-year marriage. I was like, wait a second. This is a long road to get here. It's October 14th at 11:59 p.m. She's got to apply by in 1 minute, and you're going, I don't like the word the there. So I give you credit.
Yeah, I think one of the things that my husband and I have gotten really good at is the give and take. You know, you're not always going to get 100% of your ideas through.
Right.
So it's like, okay, like, I'll concede that. Like, we can do it your way. And then you kind of remember it so that the next time that you're like, well, how about we do this one my way, you know?
Right.
And then also, especially with the story of Captain Charlotte, because we were down to the wire with every single episode we released. Mm-hmm. There were times where I would just, and he was the audio engineer on that project. There were times where he would go, you hear
that
clip?
Freelance work?
Yeah, he is, actually. He literally is.
Clark, yeah. Tell him to call me. I'm being dead serious. Tell him to call me.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
He would say, you hear that click? And I would say, I don't hear that click. I hear that click. And I would say, nope, there's no click there. He said, let's just re-record it. And I would say, Mark, it's 9 o'clock and we have to release the episode. Like, we're not going to re-record that right now. And he'd go, okay, fine. But if we had time, I would have to say, okay,
right.
we can re-record it. So we definitely, you know, with Captain Charlotte, especially, we're kind of managing our time as well because there was deadline.
Yeah.
So that was definitely something that we had to keep in mind. So then, years later, it was, I think, December of 2022, we were driving home from San Diego from a family vacation.
And
my kids were in the car.
Someone went.
There was crazy traffic. So
really
we're like in the car for way longer than we were supposed to be. We had already gone through all of the story podcasts we normally listen to, and we're like kind of scratching the bottom of the barrel. I'm searching on my phone for something that the kids are going to want to listen to. And every single story podcast is just like grating on
why
my
you
brain.
Can't have a bad
like,
okay
there's, wait.
Like
let me
the
rewind.
Voice is
John.
So like sickening
right.
Sweet and like I hate when people talk to kids like that.
Yes.
So I was just like, oh my god, Mark, I can't listen to any more of this. The music is like
I'm just gonna play
cloying, and the
bit.
Voice
when,
and the story
we started.
I said to him, we could do better.
Awesome.
We could definitely do better. So on the ride home, while my kids were listening to these terrible podcasts, we started talking about what we would do. And in a former life, a past life, I was an actress and I've always wanted to do voiceover work. So I told him I would be really happy to do the voiceover for this. And I told him, if we do it, I get on the byline too. It's going to be co-written. I'm not going to just be editing. We're going to be writing it together. And he said, okay, yeah, I can agree to that. And so he decided to take a bedtime story that he had told my older son for many years about Captain Charlotte and turn it into the podcast. That was the story we were going to base the podcast on. And we kind of had to invent a way of collaborating together that felt good to both of us. So he wrote the first draft and then he would pass it off to me. And then I would put in changes and send it to him. And we would go back and forth until we were both happy with it. And then it would be done. And we went back and forth with all the episodes like that until all of them were done.
Is it both happy or is it fatigue? Like, do you just get
happy. Happy. Like, we were both happy with it. And then it would be done. Yeah, we were both perfectionists with our work. So right. There were certain episodes that we passed back and forth 10, 15 times, just making little minor tweaks here and there. And once all the episodes were done, then we started recording them. And before we recorded them, we would do a read through and even make more changes so that it sounded perfect. And then we started recording the episodes. And so that's really how the project was birthed, I would say. And then
Now, somewhere in here, you got a diagnosis.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, we were in the middle of recording, I think maybe episode 7-ish. And that's when I was diagnosed with cancer.
So that's halfway through.
Yeah. Yeah, we so were.
It
we
wasn't
were
like
not...
you could back out. You're halfway. You're up waist high.
Yeah. Oh, and I should mention that my husband got laid off from his day job in January, and we decided to just go all in on Captain Charlotte for a few months. He was going to not look for a job right away. We were just going to hit it and try to get it out really fast, try to monetize, you know, like really try to hit it. And then he would look for a day job. But I got diagnosed with cancer before that happened. And so he actually is just now starting to look for a day job. That was in January of 2023 that he got laid off. Yeah.
Did you? My wife had head and neck cancer. And it was
I'm
insane.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Cancer
turned
is
out
insane.
Okay. But like, she called me with, how did you receive your diagnosis? Was it, you got a phone call?
So with breast cancer, I mean, I really don't know a lot about head and neck cancer, but with breast cancer, there's a lot of things that lead up to being diagnosed. So most people, when they're diagnosed with cancer, are not like that moment of being diagnosed isn't usually like a huge shock. You kind of know at that point.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I had my first mammogram because I turned 40 in 2023. I had my first mammogram.
Looking good. Well
Thank
done.
You. you should have seen me before cancer. I've aged like 10 years in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's what your wife says all the time.
Yeah. So I turned 40 in January of 2023. I had my first mammogram. And I got called back for an ultrasound. And as soon as I had the ultrasound, I pretty much knew that I had cancer because, I mean, I've had babies. I know what it looks like when they're measuring things. And there was several large, you know, the ultrasound tech isn't allowed to say anything. But I was looking and she's measuring these large black circles, you know. She's going over the area. They let me go. They called me back to do more. So at that point, I was pretty sure. When she was done with the ultrasound, she said, do you want to wait and I can give you the results? Or do you want to go home and get the results via email? And no ultrasound tech has ever said that to me before. So I was like, oh, wait. And then she gave me the results and it was given a BI-RADS score of 5, which basically means cancer. Mm. And then I had a biopsy. And then the biopsy results confirmed that it was cancer. So the way that I got the actual official diagnosis is that someone from the imaging company called me with the biopsy results and told me that it was cancer.
Kind of knowing that it was coming, did you like look into treatment before you got the diagnosis at all?
Well, my sister was diagnosed with breast cancer 4 months before me. So I was very familiar with the treatment, at least in the beginning stages that she was in. And knowing that the diagnosis was coming and she was going through chemotherapy at the time. So she's on the East Coast and I'm on the West Coast. So we were on the phone and she had a lot of free time resting in bed. And she and I put together a spreadsheet with all the top oncologists in my area. And I don't even remember everything that was on the spreadsheet, but it was basically ready to go so that when I got the diagnosis, I could pull the trigger. And I talked to her and my therapist a lot about the plan for the moment when I get the phone call. And we're type A people. So I had everything planned out to the moment. So as soon as my phone rang and they said it was cancer, I got my anti-anxiety medication, emergency medication, Klonopin in my hand, took it straight away before I even hung up the phone with her, passed out for a couple hours, woke up, opened the spreadsheet, made an appointment the same day that I got diagnosed. Because I was not...
How's therapy going?
Not messing around. I love therapy.
No, that's not messing around.
Yeah, therapy's great. I think everybody should be in therapy. It's just the one difficulty is finding a therapist that you can really connect with. That's really important. It's not like, a regular... Well, even to some extent with a regular doctor, you should really make sure that you're, you know, on the same page and you can communicate well. But especially with a therapist, people who are looking to get into therapy, my suggestion is meet a few of them before you decide on one. It's kind of like dating. You know, you want to find someone that you really can connect with and can talk with, that you can open up with. So I went through a couple therapists, but I've been with my therapist that I have now for probably about 5 years.
That's good.
I was really lucky to already have a good relationship with her. She knew me really well. And so she's been able to help me through the cancer. I've been very lucky in that way.
What? Do you know my story?
No, I don't.
With mental health?
No, I don't.
Oh, so I went batshit crazy. I mean...
I did see on your website it said, I went crazy, so I'm allowed to use the word crazy.
Yes.
But I didn't know anything else beyond that.
Oh, no. I was in my underwear with a BB gun looking for aliens crazy. And
oh, okay. What was your diagnosis?
Which one? There was bipolar, there was manic, there was anxiety, generalized anxiety disorder. Mm. There was schizophrenia. Yeah. There was blah, blah, blah. So
oh,
I get
sorry.
Like, oh, no, it's okay. And then, so I saw like a gazillion therapists.
Uh-huh.
But I think like some people are just in a place where like therapy, like your head is so far gone, therapy's not gonna land with you. And
yeah.
I was there for a long time. So then just real quick, and listener, if you've heard this before, you can fast forward. I got diagnosed like 7 different disorders, 7 different drugs. The drugs are counterindicating. I'm taking lithium. It turns out that lithium, if you're me, is toxic. So it's turning to poison. I'm suicidal and the drug that I'm taking so that I don't kill myself is actually poisoning me. So I just go, okay, I'm going to go off everything and I'm just going to manage this myself. And everybody in my life took off because they're like, we don't want to be around for that shit show. So, except my daughter, who was then 6, 7. So she and I spent the summer. I detoxed and I was still going to take my own life at the end of the summer. But I mean, it was a crazy detox. I was cold turkey off of everything. You never want to do that. But she worked so hard all summer that when I got to the end of it, I'm like, I can't dishonor her work this way. So I decided not to. So now I manage it. Like I exercise constantly and I'm up at 3 o'clock every morning and I have a meditation program and a journaling program and blah, blah, blah. And I do it that way. But I was like so many people that I've interviewed have had successful trips with therapy that I think about it now and again.
Yeah. I have had in my life certain times where I knew I needed therapy and so I would seek it out, but I wasn't really ready to accept change.
Right.
And so it didn't really work for me or stick. I have generalized anxiety disorder.
There it is.
Yeah. And then in the past, I've struggled with an eating disorder. So that was really where, in particular with an eating disorder, it's very difficult to get help unless you really want it.
Yeah. Eating disorder. Horrible.
Yeah. They're very insidious. So it's very, very difficult to treat. I also have, it's kind of dovetail with mental health, but I have something called dysautonomia, which is an autonomic nerve disorder. So, basically my fight or flight response is, not working properly. So, my body can get overloaded in times of stress and I get very, very physically ill.
You hung in there for my technical breakdown just now. So that was good.
Yeah. No, it's like times of personal stress. I can kind of lose my bodily functions. I get really nauseous and, I can faint and, it's really bad.
Oh, how do you manage? Or do you manage that? Or is that just?
Yeah. I manage that with anti-anxiety medication.
Okay.
Yeah. Because the key is like a stress diet, like not getting too stressed out. I've learned my triggers. For a long time, I was undiagnosed, so I had really no idea what was wrong with me. I was just really, really sick for a long time.
You're not.
I had episodes over the past like 10 or 15 years. I'd had episodes where I would get really sick and I didn't know why. And then the most recent one was in the summer, fall of 2022. And then I finally got diagnosed with dysautonomia and got medicated and I was just feeling better for maybe 4 or 5 months before I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I've been sick for a long time. A long time. Yeah.
You have, though, this great energy. What's the trick?
Thank you. I don't know. I think it's just who I am, you know?
Cool teacher energy.
Yeah, I am a teacher. I would like to think I have cool teacher energy.
You have like cool teacher energy, like, you know, hard to rattle, patience a mile long, your sense of humor. You don't come off as dealing with anything.
You know, I've been through a lot of really hard things in my life. Outside of just illness. And I think when people go through really hard things, there's kind of two general ways. They can either let it destroy their lives and they kind of turn in on themselves and it just turns into darkness and fire and hell, or they can swing the pendulum the other way and say, that's not me. I'm not going to let that define me. I'm not going to do that with my life. I'm going to do something different. And I think that's kind of more my personality is to, like, when bad things happen, to move away from it and not let it define me and try to overcome it and be better than it. And so because a lot of hard things have happened to me, I've kind of continually sort of leveled up spiritually, I think.
I have an amazing story about hard things and I cry every time I tell it. So I'm probably going to cry. But So the way my wife found out about her cancer, she thought she bit her cheek. And she kept going and kept going and wasn't healing. And she's very close with her dentist. They just like get along really well. And so she goes in to see him and 45 minutes later, she's in surgery. And she goes through this nightmare journey of an operation, a horrific operation. They cut her from like back of her ear all the way across her neck. They lopped her head off. She called herself a Pez dispenser. Then it was months of chemo and radiation. They burned her face off. They make that mask and they pin you on a table and
I did that.
Oh, okay. Then they burn your face. Didn't you know? It's horrible. So,
yeah.
And
they didn't
and
burn my face off. They burned my tit off, but yeah.
Fair enough.
Thing.
All right. So you,
that's
right.
A mask.
you know how bad that is.
Yeah.
And so, but this is the hard thing part of it. And this is the best answer I've ever heard anybody give. So, she goes to see him. It's all done. And like her face was mangled. So she had to take like 8 months before she could even see anybody. And so she goes to see him and I go and she's sitting in a chair and he walks in and here we go. And all they're doing, he hugs her and they hug for like 2 minutes. And because he's the one that found it and he goes, how was it? And I hear him, they're whispering. He goes, how was it? And she goes, it was really hard. And he takes one beat and I hear him say, well, now you know you can do hard things. And I always thought that was the best way to treat hard things. Once you're over them, it's now you know you can do them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I can definitely do hard things. That's for sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, all right. So if you had the mask, well, you had if you had the mask, the chest plate version of the mask.
No, I had a mask. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Because
then you really know, then you know, you're wrong. You know a lot about head and neck cancer if you had that, because that's the whole show.
Oh. Well, I mean, I didn't have surgery on my head or my neck, but I was getting radiation to my, basically from here and then down below my breast and then over and then through my armpit. So, it was very important that you stay perfectly still and in the exact same position. So yeah, I had the face mask locked onto the table, but
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and then further unpleasantness with that was then being exposed. So, you know, that's really uncomfortable to be locked to a table and then exposed. And then they walk out of the room. You're just alone. Yeah.
That's a sci-fi radiation movie.
Yes. Yes. There were so many times in my cancer treatment where I was like, this is like alien abduction stuff. But never more than radiation was 100% like abducted by aliens.
Yeah.
For sure. Because they tell you. I don't know if your wife had to do this, but when you're getting radiation to your chest, you have to breathe at certain times. So was just someone in a microphone going, take a deep breath, hold, breathe out, breathe in, you know, and so it was really weird.
Oh my God.
Every day for 29 days, I did 29 rounds of radiation.
God, that is horrible. All right.
That was you know what? It was horrible. That was the easiest part of my treatment.
Whoa. Did you?
Yeah.
I got a gazillion questions.
So go ahead. I have a gazillion answers.
Oh, cool. Your husband was your caregiver?
Actually, to some extent, yeah, because he's my husband. But when I was first diagnosed, I told him, I really need you to take care of my kids, because I was the primary caretaker for my kids.
Right.
I worked with my business in the morning, and then I was, after school, I was like basically a stay-at-home mom. So right. that obviously was going to change. So I told him, I need to know that our kids are taken care of if I'm going to get through this. So you take care of the kids. I will take care of me. And if I need more help beyond that, it'll be my parents who live nearby. My brother and my sister flew in at different times to help take care of me. But really, for the most part, I mean, there were when I went to chemotherapy, I really wanted my husband with me. And so my parents would watch my kids on those days. For the most part, I think my mom brought me to like one, my sister brought me to one, but I really wanted my husband with me for chemotherapy. But when it came to surgery, like when I had my double mastectomy, my mom and dad took care of me completely. My husband wasn't involved in that at all because, he had to take care of my kids.
Did you lose your hair?
Yeah, that's why it's so short right now. This is like
months of,
I hate it. Thank you. Yeah. I used to have really long, beautiful hair. And it is growing back. This is 8 months. So I'm thinking, you know,
I'll tell you a story about that.
I just feel like I look like a boy, you know,
no,
it's just,
you do not.
With breast cancer, you lose so many, so much of your femininity.
Yeah.
You lose your hair, you lose your breasts.
Yeah.
Many people who go through chemo go to early menopause. So you just lose all of these things that make you feel like a young woman.
Right.
And so I think I'm just really like desperate to get that, the feminine look back from my hair.
It comes back with, so my wife's name is Trish. When she had, because of, she was getting it in the face, she lost like the back half of her hair. So she had hair from like here forward, but then from here back, she didn't really have a ton of hair, which is weird.
That's rough. That's
because
a rough look.
When you look in the mirror, you see hair like here, and you're like,
yeah,
I can get by. And
yeah,
you know, and I kind of didn't tell her too much because like you've had enough bad news this month, like, you know.
Yeah.
She went to a hairdresser who was pretty frank with her, which was good, and said, you know, yeah, like, look, we gotta, this is good, but we're like 18 months out now, and it's like all popped back in. Like, she looks great. It just,
yeah.
And she takes collagen.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. To help my hair grow.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be smart. You're going to, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's growing back. It looks like if I just focus on just what's here, it's thick and normal from what it was before. I just want it long again.
Well,
sometimes I just feel so desperate to put it in a ponytail.
You want it long again so you can tie it up and have it short.
Yeah. You wouldn't understand. The women listening are like, yeah, at the end of the day, you just want to not deal with it anymore. You want it to go back. Because also you're seeing my hair it's the morning here in California. It gets puffier and puffier through the day. Oh. So by the end of the day, it's really like froed out. That's when I'm just like, I want it to go in a ponytail and like not be here anymore.
I know a little bit what you're talking about because this is a rough admission, but there was a time in my life where I wore, you know what a top knot is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a time in my life where I wore a top knot every day.
Okay. That's, yeah.
No, it's not okay. It was wrong.
It's a look. I mean, smart. Hey, I live in Los Angeles, so.
No, right.
There's lot of people here with top knots. It's a look. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't
pull it off. It was bad. So, all right. So you're in the, so now I understand your story even better. How did you do anything, let alone go to work? When you go through chemo and radiation, there's brain fog, there's neuropathy, there's, forget the
nausea.
Psychological. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I think I almost died twice because of chemotherapy. So it was really hard. I'll tell you. So, with triple negative breast cancer, you do about 6 months of chemotherapy. It's about the most chemotherapy a person can get across all cancer diagnoses. Because unlike hormone receptive breast cancer, some breast cancer feeds off of estrogen, progesterone, or HER2, which I'm not really sure what that is, but I have triple negative, meaning my cancer was not because of estrogen, progesterone, or HER2. And so there are very, very few treatment options because of that. So they kind of throw everything chemo-wise at people with triple negative breast cancer because it's also one of the most aggressive types of breast cancer. Mm. I got the most chemotherapy. And the first chemo, the first 12 infusions are carboplatin and Taxol. And that was not as bad as the second, the last four infusions, which they give you every other week, which I actually had to get every 3 weeks because I couldn't tolerate it. That's called adriamycin and Taxotere. And that's known as the Red Devil because it is extremely dangerous and very, very hard on your body.
No.
So I knew a lot of this going in because my sister had just been diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer and I had triple negative breast cancer. And so I saw what she was going through with her chemotherapy regimen. I was at the time running my business. I was teaching 4 Parent and Me classes a week. I had over 50 clients. So I was really, really busy. And that was a huge amount of prep work because the classes I taught were process art and sensory experiences. So I was mixing up paint and hand making all, because I do a lot of like handmade materials and stuff. So hand making materials and sensory materials. It was very, very physically taxing, huge cleanups required, which I had an employee to help me with, but it was still a lot. I had clients that had paid for in the 8-week session, I couldn't just stop. I couldn't afford to just refund them all the money because I had my employee. I had 2 employees at the time and I had bought all the materials. So I had to do chemotherapy and class at the same time. And I continued teaching class through the first 12 cycles of that first chemotherapy. the first combination of drugs, which were, quote, not as hard, it was still really, really hard. It was really hard because I was doing my class, chemotherapy, and then trying to record, but we really stopped recording at that point. We couldn't, that was something that like we just really couldn't do. And then I taught, my last class was actually a big Halloween party a year ago. And it was a huge undertaking. I wanted to go out with a bang, and I did, because I ended up in the hospital about 4 days later, with neutropenic fever, which is basically no white blood cells, no more white blood cells.
That's bad.
It's bad. That's very bad. Yep. Everyone knows that that's bad. You need white blood cells. So I was basically, my body was just getting a fever for no reason all the time. And so I missed last Halloween with my family. I was in the hospital for about 5 days, and that was really heartbreaking. My
You're
children.
You're gonna get this one though.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Really hope I'm not in the hospital this year. I don't see a reason why I would be. So let's hope that I can actually go trick or treating this year. But my kids last year, they were 4 and 8, and that's like, you know, it's like prime Halloween ages. And so that was really, really sad to miss Halloween last year. And then through the fall, I was on this Red Devil chemotherapy. It was so hard. I was so, so, so sick. My last infusion was December 26th of 2023. And about maybe a week after that, I was in the hospital again with bacterial pneumonia, but also with almost no immune system. So that was the time when I thought, okay, this is how I'm going to go, because I was in the hospital with a 104 fever that would not come down no matter what they would give me. My pulse was like 150 and my blood pressure was like 70 over 40 for 24 hours. Yeah. I was shaking uncontrollably that whole time. They wouldn't let me have a blanket. They made me keep like ice packs all over my body. I was shaking. It was the worst time of my life, for sure. I remember distinctly lying in the hospital bed, looking out the window, thinking, this is it. This is how I'm going to go. Like, I can't believe I got through all of my chemotherapy and the very last infusion is going to take me out. Like, this fucking sucks.
What's that like when you think you're going to die?
I would say I did not get 100% to I'm going to die. I was approaching the possibility. So
getting,
I don't think I can really
say,
you
were getting pissed off at it.
No, I mean, what I mean to say is, like, I wasn't like, okay, throw in the towel, this is it, I'm out. I was like, okay, this is possible. We're approaching the possibility, you know, that I might, like, this might be it. It felt really upsetting. I was really, really upset, but honestly, I was so sick. I wasn't thinking straight. You know, I'm like when you have 104 fever and your heart is barely pounding, and I was shaking. I was also vomiting uncontrollably. I wasn't really like, what is the meaning of life? You know, I was like just really just trying to push through.
Yeah.
You know, just really, it was moment to moment, just like, got to get through this moment, got to get through this moment, you know, just really just trying to get through. Finally got to sleep that night, and then they were just taking blood. I had a port at the time. They were just taking blood from my port every couple hours, testing it. And a nurse came in and woke me up, and she said, "We're going to give you a blood transfusion now. You previously, signed a release for that, so we're going to go ahead and do that." And I was like, "Okay," like that was really scary. Obviously, to hear that I needed to have a blood transfusion. And I just remember, like, being half asleep, and she brings the bag of blood in, and I said, is that, because it's kind of gross. It kind of grossed me out. I said, is that blood from one person or from a lot of people?
That's a good question.
Yeah. And she was like, I don't know. I still don't know, but because it was like, it really kind of grossed me out. But very thankful for the blood donors, but also like kind of squeaked out by that. And then, And then after that, I was doing a lot better. But yeah, I was in the hospital for like another 5 days. And then about 10 days after that, I had my double mastectomy. So it was just, they don't, you know, they can't wait for you to fully recover because there's, you know, they have to get, you know, they have to get it out. You know, it's, there's a timing that everything has to happen under. So I had to have surgery right away.
Of course, now there's the guy outside doing leaves right now. So
I hear that.
Well, I'm staying quiet because I'll just cut myself out when I edit this so you won't have to hear the leaf guy. Thank you for vamping, though. That was nice of you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to ignore it. And yeah, if I hear it again, I'll just keep talking. Keep talking.
Just give me another 45 seconds. I'm sure they'll be done.
Yeah. And then I should also mention that part of my chemotherapy regimen included a very new drug called Keytruda, which is an immunotherapy. And it's a very powerful drug. It's not, I would say, I'm sure the scientists understand it really well, but there's a lot of side effects that come up that they don't really know too much about because it is such a new drug and a new therapy. And what can happen to some people is that you can acquire an autoimmune disorder because it kind of kicks your immune system into high gear. And as my oncologist said, if there's a side effect for me to have, I'm going to have it. I had the hardest time with everything. And so I also acquired a very serious autoimmune disorder from the immunotherapy. And I brought my concerns to my oncologist as they were happening. And anyone who's been through chemotherapy knows that your oncologist will say, oh, it's chemotherapy. It's chemotherapy to everything. Oh, it's chemotherapy. So I was telling her, my mouth is really dry. I'm getting really intense pain in my salivary glands every time I eat. Oh, it's chemotherapy. It's chemotherapy. Dry mouth, very common. Chemotherapy. So as I was recovering from my mastectomy, all of these symptoms, my eyes were so dry. I had to go to bed at like 6 p.m. because I couldn't keep my eyes open. My nose stopped making snot. I had no saliva. And I was just like trying to grab my bladder was extremely painful. I could barely walk. And so as I was recovering from my mastectomy, I was also like, what the fuck is going on with everything else in my body? Like, why is nothing working properly? And I was at my parents' house recovering, and my parents are both in the medical field, and they did some research online, and they said, we think that you acquired Sjogren's, which is an autoimmune disorder, from the immunotherapy. And, you know, I read some case reports and it really seemed like that was what was happening. Sjogren's is an autoimmune disorder where your immune system attacks all of your mucous membranes. And so that's why I had no tears, no snot, no saliva. My bladder was really painful because your bladder has a mucosal lining that keeps the acidity of the urine from burning the skin of your bladder, the flesh of your bladder. And I didn't have that anymore. Yeah. So on top of recovering, I was also like, my whole body was like freaking out. And so I went to my oncologist and I brought all the case reports and I brought my mom with me and I said, this is what's happening to me. And she was like, huh? Yeah. Those drugs do the weirdest things. Yeah.
I have some words.
Great reaction. Yeah. And I said, it says here, you have to give me prednisone. So you have to give me prednisone right now. And she gave me prednisone and that helped a lot. But unfortunately, then my plastic surgeon found out about it and said, you have to go off the prednisone because I was recovering from a mastectomy and it can cause delayed wound healing. So I had to go off the prednisone again. And then once I healed from the mastectomy, then right away I started radiation and my radiation oncologist said I could go back on the prednisone. So I was able to go back on the prednisone at that point. And
God bless you.
Yeah. And then, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to keep talking. I could just.
So it's interesting when you're in that horror and you can't, you know, the only thing you can do is I'm going to live the next 10 minutes. And you're in a marriage and a family. The power dynamics. Well, not even power, just all the dynamics share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was reentry like? Because your husband now has developed a way of doing things. The kids are right? The well, kids have been a little conditioned, and he's, you know, and now you're coming, and now we're going back to 50-50 when it was, you know, when it was 100-0, now we're going back to 50-50. That can be rough.
Well, it was never 100-0 because I did have small children and I really tried to shield them from as much of what was going on as possible.
Right.
I deal with developmentally appropriate practice professionally. So I was thinking a lot about how to deal with it in a way that was developmentally appropriate for them. So I did explain to them in a developmentally appropriate way what was going on, but I really didn't want them to see the worst of it. So I did try to stay involved as much as I could. So it was never 100-0, but there definitely was.
I mean, you were pretty not.
Well, there were times when it was 100-0, like when I was recovering from the mastectomy and I was at my parents' house for 10 days, I was completely obviously tapped out. But no, it was never really like that much. Like I was never like 100-0 or even 95-5. I wouldn't really put a number to it because it was really day to day.
Right.
There are some things that will never be the same. There are some routines that change that we're not going to change back. Because something that's also really important to remember is that I'm less than a year out from chemotherapy and radiation, and I'm still healing. I still have Sjogren's disorder, which is, for me, for some people it's mild. For me, it's very severe, and it can cause fatigue. All of these things can cause fatigue. So I'm not at 100% capacity at all. Right now. So we really haven't gone back to being 50-50. It really never was 50-50. I was doing more than my husband usually. Because like I said, he was working and I was home in the afternoons with my kids.
Cancer fucked me. Because when Trish went down, it kind of was 100-0 for a while. And when she came back, she's like, well, wait a second. You can do dishes. You can cook if you have to. You can do your daughter's laundry and separate bras and underwear. I don't have to do it all the time anymore, even though I can.
It sounds... I don't know. It sounds like maybe cancer awakened some equality that was missing in your relationship.
Well, that's the appropriate way to put it. But for me, I'm the victim. I deserve a support group.
You should have a support group. There are support groups for loved ones of people who are affected by cancer. Would probably be people who would feel you on that. That would say, yeah, I took on a lot more, and it was really hard for me. I know you're joking, but you literally could join a support group if you wanted to.
I actually Thank is the Thyroid Head and Neck Cancer Foundation, and I'm their caregiver spokesperson because my wife Cindy was just so it was so bizarre. She wound up like on the Today Show. It was just so bizarre. Her recovery was so crazy that it got media attention, which was cool, but. You know, you've been there. Even when you have a victory, like your podcast, there's so much backstory that people don't know. That it's extra salt on whatever you're eating. Like I get you love my podcast, but if you knew what I had to do to get through it, you'd love it even more. I think. How? So you're literally getting the shit beat out of you. You're dying. You're dealing with a sexuality issue I can't even comprehend. You are dealing with your physical appearance. You're losing time with your children that you're gauging. You want to hear the most amazing story about that? So my wife is crying one day during this. And I go in, and I was a primary caregiver for like 22 hours a day. But for 2 hours a day, I went to the gym because I just have to do that. So I come in one day and she's crying and she can barely talk, but they took like a, a, a piece of her thigh the size of a post-it and stuck it in her cheek. And so she can barely talk. And she goes, but I was really moved by this. So she's crying and I'm like, what's the matter? I'm going to say it, but I can't do the mumbling because you're an actor. I'm not, she's mumbling that she lost a year and a half with her daughter and she's not a mother and blah, 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 blah. And so I go, all right, you know, if you feel that way, my daughter's name is Gramercy. I'm like, I'm going to go talk to Gramercy about it. So I went and talked to I'm going to cry again. I went and talked to Gramercy about it. And I go, Graham, your mom feels like you lost her for a year and a half and you're never going to get that back. And she's so sad about that. What's your take on it? And she said, I didn't lose a year and a half. I saw two people stick together. And I thought that was like, kids have such an amazing take on that. And, you know, I bet your kids too have a different take than maybe what you perceive them to have.
Yeah. Well, my kids are a lot younger than Gramercy. I feel a lot of grief over not being able even still to be the kind of mother that I was before or the kind of mother that I wanted to be. But they are seeing me survive and thrive through hardship. And the modeling of that is really amazing for them.
That's a fantastic lesson, man.
Yeah. I mean, I really wish they weren't learning it right now, but they are. You know, they're seeing me. And I don't think, especially my younger son, he doesn't understand right now what's happened to his mom. But when he reflects, when he's older, he will. And, right. You know, the lesson will come for him when he's ready for it.
I, from experience, can speak to what an addled brain looks like. And you must have had an addled brain. How did you create not only work, but good work that way?
Well, the scripts were all written and done before I was diagnosed. Like I said, we finished writing all the scripts. I'm a very focused and creative person, so it would take a lot, I think, to kind of knock me off my game in that respect. I'm always wanting to create things and think creatively and make things. And it gave me something to focus on in the hardest times. I thought, you know, I lost my business completely. You know, the way that it was before, it will never be that way again, completely lost. And I just didn't want to let go of Captain Charlotte. I wanted to hold on to that. I really wanted to see that through. So while I was out, you know, doing chemotherapy, surgery, radiation, we had, like I said, about 7 episodes recorded completely. So my husband all the while was editing. And if you've listened to the story of Captain Charlotte, you know there was a lot of editing that went into it, a lot of sound effects. The way that we recorded, I would do each voice one at a time, and then he would have to kind of put it together. So,
how many of those voices were you?
Almost all of them.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Unless it was like, thank you. Unless it was like definitely my husband, like if you could hear it was like definitely a man. Then it was me. Like I did a lot of the male voices as well. Yeah. Yeah, it was all me. And we didn't use any voice modulation either. It was all just me and a mic.
You and a mic while your head is being banged around in radiation and chemo.
Well, no, because so I was just saying we recorded and then I got diagnosed and he was editing. He was just putting together those first 7 episodes the whole time. And it wasn't until April when I was done. May, when I was done with radiation, that we got back into the studio and started recording again.
It's admirable, and here's why. And I bet you agree with me on this. You get done with chemo and radiation, and the system is done with you, but you're not done with it. Right? It reverbs for months and months and months and months, and the psychology and the recovery of it. And it, you know, it, first off, radiation stays in your body for a couple of weeks after your last treatment anyway.
Months. Yeah.
Or sorry,
I mean, I'm still going through it right now because I won't be completely done until January.
That's why. Okay. So that's my point. So, you know, to stop, people say like, I stopped chemo. You didn't. You stopped going for chemo and radiation, but you're still getting chemo and radiation.
Yeah, your body is still healing.
Right. And it takes it takes a long time, man. And that's poison. So for you to be able to go back to work and produce at that level, that's that. And it's also really, really hard, almost impossible. And I think you did it, to leave a creative project. You can leave it for a couple of days, but to leave it for months and then come back to it and pick it up right at the same level, that's really hard to do.
Yeah. Well, my husband never stopped working on it. And for me, it was like a candle that I had inside of me and I was protecting the flame the whole time. I would never let it go out. I was always thinking about it and it was something to look forward to. You know, it was like I had lost my business, like I said. So, at the end of treatment, I needed something that I was going to look forward to that I could jump right back into that was waiting for me. And so it was really important to me that I do that. And I will say, you know, you're very impressed with my ability to produce. I want to say, I mentioned that the treatment for the Sjogren's was prednisone. And I don't know if you've ever taken prednisone. I was put on an extremely high dose of prednisone over the summer.
How big did you get?
Up to 60 milligrams. Yeah. So it's basically speed. So I was basically, you know, I don't know if, have you ever taken a high dose of prednisone?
No, I have not.
It sends you, I was chatty. I wanted to hang out. I wanted to talk. I was up to 3 a.m. I was a mile a minute. I had illusions of grandeur. I had all these ideas of things I was going to do.
Well, I haven't yet, but now you're making me want to.
Well, you know, it's not worth it because coming down sucks because now I've tapered off of it and I'm like, you go down, 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 right to the depths.
Right.
But through really most of the spring and summer producing it, I was frapped up by prednisone. So I think that really helped a lot.
Like any good creative, you had a little help.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. I mean, I think I could have done it without it, but it didn't hurt. Because now that I'm off the prednisone, I've just recently in the last like 2 months gotten completely off of it. You have to taper really, really slowly. I've just been really depressed. I've been thinking more clearly, which is bad when you're a cancer survivor.
Right.
You know, the fear of recurrence and just like the heaviness of what I've just been through is like finally crashing down on me. And I was kind of able to avoid that for a few months because I was just really kind of high the whole time.
Right.
My
wife has a story of indignity about that. I can't remember the name of the drug right now, but one of the drugs they gave her was like not necessarily mood state, but like a sedative to help for pain management. And it wasn't like the ones you're thinking of. And it comes in a bottle like this big and they're big capsules like this. And she had to take like six a day. And so the doctor wrote this prescription for like four bottles, which was like 8 million pills. So she's done. And we adopted this like feral dog, like literally feral dog that had never been in a house and blah, blah, and was just, you couldn't touch it and was scared. Now she's a pillow, but then, it turns out that, the drug that my wife was taking, veterinarians prescribed for hyper anxious dogs. So she's like giving her prescriptions to the dog instead of her. It was fun.
At least you use them, I guess.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, you can't give them back, so.
Yeah.
Captain Charlotte, you have seasons. plural.
Yeah. So the yes. Well, no, we've just released one season of the Straight Captain Charlotte. Yeah.
If you create one season, the implication is there's going to be seasons.
More seasons.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Right now, we're currently in the process of trying to monetize. And
you got Verizon as an advertiser. You monetized.
Yeah. When we hang up, I'll tell you how much they pay.
Okay. I bet I can guess. Having a podcast, yeah. I can guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're in the process of monetizing and kind of organizing ourselves around that, seeing what we can do.
Well, here's what you can do. You're writers. You can write the graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
You can write.
Yeah.
You can license the rights.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an agent?
No.
I'm going to email you when we're done.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Getting an agent would be fantastic.
I'm going to email you when you're done. When okay. we're done.
All right.
But I mean, there's a bunch of ways other than other episodes that you could, because I suck at this. I kind of don't want to talk about it because I don't want to give away too much. But I will say one, and full transparency, I haven't gotten through the whole thing yet. But I'm on like 8, and I have questions about the egg, but that's for later too. My impression of it is it's Harry Potter-ish. It's so well done that Thank an you. Adult can really get into it.
Yeah, that's why we say it's not just for kids.
Right.
It's for big kids and adults.
But you're right about it because it's so well done. I'm a 61-year-old guy who works out 2 hours a day, has a 16-year-old daughter and a wife on the rebound. I don't have a lot of time. I got caught up in it. I'm getting Facebook calls. That's great. Stop.
I'm glad to hear you found it interesting because if you remember, I told you we were in the car. And one of our goals was this has to sound good to grownups and kids because you're trapped in a car. You want the grown. And then we've actually discovered that we know lots of grownups that listen without kids.
Yeah. No,
people really enjoy it.
You're in that Harry Potter zone where like a kid's going to get into it, but it's compelling enough that, an adult and it actually. And I don't know if you intended this or not. It's also kind of like relaxing to listen to.
No, we did. Yeah. The music in particular. Yeah. So here's something. If you want to talk about creative process, the music for the story of Captain Charlotte. So my husband found a couple, royalty free music services that had like a really good variety and some good quality stuff. And so I said to him, instead of just like, every episode going on there and like trying to find things that match, let's sit down and let's name every vibe that happens in the story of Captain Charlotte. Like there's sentimental moments, there's action moments, there's triumph moments, there's danger moments. And then let's go into those websites and let's pull out two or three songs for each vibe. And that's the soundtrack. And so there's a world, an auditory world of the story of Captain Charlotte. So you'll notice that sometimes you'll hear the same song and then they end. We also wanted them all to kind of sound related. So there is a very specific place you go when you listen to the story of Captain Charlotte. It made editing it a lot easier because we would go, okay, put the sentimental song in, but it also just makes it so much more cohesive.
It feels like, and I don't know if you intended this. Listening to it feels like a really good video game. Because without sounding hokey. It really is its own environment.
Yeah, like that's what we want you to feel, that you're stepping into that world.
It's part children's book.
It's immersive. Yeah.
Yeah. It's part children's book. It's part, there's a whole bunch of theme here that's adult. And it's cool that we're able to do that in the same space. You're too young. There used to be this video game called Myst, And Myst was a journey through this whole planet, and you had to solve a bunch of puzzles and save somebody from something. But it was its own, like, it was like a really strange world. And they did the same thing you did. They had like a couple different soundtracks for each mood, and that's a fantastic formula, and it really works. It's really impressive.
Thank you so much.
Could you animate it?
Yeah, we would love to. I mean, we're in Los Angeles, so
right.
We would love to pitch it, you know, to Netflix or HBO.
Well, yeah, hey, if you're listening,
we definitely see it as like animated. We could very easily turn it into a series of books. Yeah. Something that's important to know is like this is the origin story of Captain Charlotte, but my husband has hundreds of stories about the story of Captain Charlotte. We could, if somebody wanted to release a book series, we could probably write a book every 3 months, like easily just pump them out. So yeah, we're hoping to do something like that. And then also to continue to release the episodes. But if you've listened to it, you know, it's an incredible amount of work. Yeah. So we can't just like drop more episodes. Like it takes, we are very, very careful. We write the script so carefully, produce it so carefully. We want to get all the sounds right, all the voices right, the timing just right. The way that we pass. Yeah, it's right there. That's the studio.
That's remarkable, man.
Yeah.
I'm not blowing smoke up your chemo. It's really, it's really well done.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Really well done. I mean, production values are excellent, but like you said, the timing, it's got a great pace. You don't get,
we were very careful with that. So like I said, we passed the writing back and forth. We would also do a similar thing when Mark would have the episode ready for review. I would write notes. He would fix it. I'd write more notes. You know, we'd go back and forth until we were just about ready to release it. We would listen to it together and really like, okay, got to take a second off that. Got to make that music come in a little earlier. And so we were just so particular with everything.
You did it. You can hear it. It's like the medium of the audiobook is easier than what you do. Because it's one voice. There's, you know, barely any production other than somebody
reading.
There's
no music or sounds or anything like that. Yeah.
Right. Holding somebody's attention I'm not your husband. I look at production as a chance to fuck up because I can't do it. So being able to hold attention with all those variables all the time, that's tough, man. I give you credit.
Thank you.
It's hard, man.
Thank you. And I'll pass that on to him because, like I said, he taught himself Pro Tools. And he, like, this is the very first thing he's ever done the audio engineering of. And if you actually, once you listen to the whole thing, if you go back and listen to the first episode, you'll see he's better at the end. Like, the first episode's great, but like,
that's the way
last, wait till you hear the last episode. The last episode is the way he engineered that. It's insane what he can do now. I'm so proud of him. And I'm really hoping that he can find more work doing it because he really enjoys it and he's so talented at it.
One from here is looking for an engineer.
Okay. Yeah, you can definitely. I mean, he could do this very easily for you.
Good.
He would love to.
And I'm even more into it now that I know that you're all the voices. You're so good at it. I didn't know that.
You didn't, like, at the end, the credits say, "The story of Captain Charlotte is written, produced, and performed by Meryl Opsahl and Mark Opsahl."
I didn't take that to mean,
oh, really?
All the voices. I just thought, like, you're the lead. I'm sure there's a supporting cast. You know, maybe a friend jumped in. Blah, 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 blah. I didn't take it to mean that. I'm blown away that that's all you.
It's all me. There's certain scenes where it's like me. I'm the narrator, and I'm four characters, and we're all talking.
Could be a cool career springboard for you too, aside from Captain Charlotte, right?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I'm doing right now is I'm auditioning for voiceover work.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. I'd like to get an agent to do that also.
Yeah. If we want to rep you or we want to contact you, what's the best way?
So the best way to contact me would be at thestoryofcaptaincharlotte@gmail.com.
Okay. And the story of Captain Charlotte's available every single place on the planet?
Yeah, it's available on all major podcast platforms. You can also follow us on Instagram at The Story of Captain Charlotte. If you're interested in my cancer journey, I posted a lot the whole way through, and you can go back and watch all my reels and stuff. That's at Mary Merrill. So that's MeryMeryl on Instagram. But if you want to shoot us an email, yeah, The Story of Captain Charlotte at Gmail is the best place.
I just interrupted. You say their email again?
TheStoryOfCaptainCharlotte@gmail.com. Or you could DM us on Instagram.
So we did the same thing with Trisha's cancer journey. We documented it and we were very forward-facing about it. And then she had like this like really alternative recovery from it. She had neuropathy and couldn't walk and couldn't. And so she had like this almost magical process that wound up listener fast talk. So 30-second elevator pitch. So she gets out of treatment and she literally can't walk. Like it's all brain fog and shuffling and can't do anything. So I take her out and I'm like, okay, she's been in the same chair for a month and a half. So I'm like, okay, I have to walk you. So it's the end of January, clear blue sky, but freezing because I'm in New York. I put a winter coat on her and it's too heavy. She can't stand up with the winter coat. Put a blanket around her, take her outside. And I bet you'll relate to this. I see her tipping her head like this and I'm like, oh crap. Cause she's stitches everywhere. And I'm like, something's wrong. And she was just like, she hadn't felt the sun in so long. She was just remembering the sun. And then, right?
Yeah.
So that, but she still can't. I'm cry telling this one too. She still can't walk. So I get her like 10 feet, 15 feet, 25 feet, 35 feet. But like that's the extent of my skills. So I belong to this gym and there's this teacher that I teach, like they're called HIIT classes. They used to be called the Rose classes, but like, wait. And Trish was also ashamed because like, I bet you can relate to this too. She felt disfigured. She wouldn't go out without big sunglasses and scarves and covering every scar and blah, blah, blah. And she felt right. So I went to this teacher. Her name was Julie. And I said, hey, can I just bring Trish to the back of your class? And, you know, I'll just shuffle with her, but it'll get her, maybe it'll get her feet moving. And she's like, absolutely. Yeah. So I go to Trish, I'm like, we're just going to try this. And she didn't want to. She was resisted it, but whatever. So I get her in a car and I get her in class and she's got a ball cap, big glasses, scarf all around her neck, right? And she's in the back and she like is legitimately shuffling like this. Like that's all she can do. So Julie says, fuck that. She goes to the back of the class, pulls Trish around, forces her in front of it, turns her around to face everybody and shuffles 45 minutes with Trish while everybody else is in class. Everybody's weeping. Trish is weeping. We get down to the car and Trish goes, do you think I could ever do that again? The phone rings. It's Julie. She's like, you bring her back here tomorrow. For 3 whole months, they work together. We're about 3 weeks in and part of the class is box jumping, which is where you got to jump up on like this 2.5 foot box. She's got neuropathy. So we bring out like this 3 foot thing and or 3 inch platform, and we're like, okay, you're gonna try to jump on that. She can't, she trips over it, she's on her knees, she's crying. Julie puts her body over her and they go forehead to forehead for like 2 minutes. I don't know what they said, but at the end of it they got back up. Trish wipes her eyes and starts working out again. And at the end of that class, Julie walks her to the 2.5 foot block and says, we don't quit till you're up on top of this. So then, for 3 months, every day, they work together every single day. The rest of the class is doing one thing, 30 people are doing, but, and now they're all like rooting for Trish, like, you can do this, you can lift 5 pounds, you can blah, blah, you can come in. So after 3 months, she gets to the point, not that she can jump up on a box, but that she can put her foot on one and then take it off and put her other foot on one. And that's like a big win. So she's standing there, it's the end of 3 months, and she's standing, she puts one foot on, she puts one, Julie walks over, and this time I heard it. They go forehead to forehead again. And she goes, you can do this today. You are a feather. You can fly. You can do this today. And Julie steps back. And people make a semicircle. And Trish looks at me. She looks at Julie. And just because of love and belief in other people, she jumps up on the box. And wow. People, and I never saw anything so beautiful in my whole life. And I then chronicled that and did this thing called the Lifted Project, which is like a We Are the World thing here. But my point in that long story is, congratulations to you for documenting your story too, because the feedback we get from being willing to share something that other people aren't willing to share is it's monumental. And I bet you get the same thing.
Yeah, it's very important to share these stories.
It shows that you're not afraid of it.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but
I think it does.
I'm afraid of it, but I think it's really, really important for... I first started sharing for all of my Instagram friends that did not have cancer because right. I wanted them to know what it was like, because breast cancer affects 1 in 8 women. And so at some point, these women or their friends or their sisters are going to go through this. And I really, really wanted to educate them on what it was like, what my experience was like, so that they could know. But now I've gotten all of these friends on Instagram who are also going through breast cancer. And it's this great support community where we can lean on each other and share. And it's so important. It is so important to share these stories for both educating people who don't know about it and also just to get connection in your life.
I'm going to push back. I think it shows that you're not afraid of it. And it's the same logic I use with the word crazy. If I'm afraid to say it, then I'm afraid to be it. If I'm not afraid to show the world that I have it, then you think you're afraid of it. I don't think you are. And I know your head better than you do. So there.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm absolutely terrified of it. So,
are you? Yeah. But your prognosis is great, right?
Well, I had stage 3C, so that's like a whisper before metastatic. So, I mean, as of right now, I'm cancer free, but I could have a recurrence. About a third of women end up having a recurrence, I think. Honestly, don't quote me on that, because I don't Google statistics because they scare me. Because it is scary. A lot of women get recurrences. You know what it is? It's a third of women who are diagnosed with early stage breast cancer will end up having metastatic disease at some point in their life. That's scary. A third of women.
Yeah, that is
really scary. And metastatic breast cancer is the only kind of breast cancer that kills. So yeah, that's super terrifying.
Except
I could definitely.
We're 6 months away from a chip that's going to detect it on day one, and you'll be all right.
I haven't heard of that chip, but if that's true, I'm excited for it.
You're making it up, but do you have any faith in the advances that we're making or no?
Well, one of the biggest advances in cancer treatment hurt me very badly. So, there's always Keytruda is a very powerful and important drug. It probably helped me become cancer free. When I had my surgery, they test all the tissue for cancer and they didn't find any. So I had a complete response to chemotherapy. And it was probably in large part due to the Keytruda, but it also, there's always another side. Like, it caused like it's really severe side effects. There's a cancer vaccine that's you know, being tested right now. That would be great. I have faith in advances. I just don't know if they're going to happen fast enough for me. Right now, my prognosis is great, but with cancer, you know, it could change in an instant, you know?
Right.
Tomorrow, I could have a stroke, you know? Like, we really don't know. The chemotherapy was so hard on my body. It's just really hard to say. And right. I really honestly try not to think about it too much.
Do you?
Because it is scary.
Yeah. I get that. Last question.
Okay.
You have, do you think about Captain Charlotte? Like I think about my show this way. As a digital legacy?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay, cool. You get that.
In my more morbid moments, I'll think my kids can listen to this and they'll be able to hear my voice.
You don't have to be morbid about it. Like I'm 61, which you'll see. And like you hopefully. Just get to a point where you're like, hey man, the digital is gonna they're not gonna be going through my notebooks, but I at least have left this thing that's in a format that I bet it will still be accessible, and your grandkids will be listening to this.
That's fun to think about. I've thought about that with my Instagram, where because my kids are so young, I thought when they're older, they can go back and watch it and understand what I was going through at that time. Because right now, the way that my younger son expresses his understanding is when he just literally said this yesterday to my husband and I overheard it. When mommy had long hair, she played with me. And now she doesn't play with me anymore. I know it's heartbreaking. My one solace is when he's older, he will go back and he'll look at my Instagram and he'll go, holy shit, that's what happened to her?
Right.
Oh my God. Like, no wonder she wasn't playing with me. Christ.
Yeah. You know,
so that's what I just keep reminding myself is like, someday he'll understand. Like, he'll get it.
You're an expert at this. Okay, I lied. It wasn't the last question. You're an expert at this.
Yeah.
My daughter, when Trish got sick, was like, 13 and a half, 14. We were very wide open with her and got criticized for it. But she insisted. She went to every single important appointment when we were getting test results, when Trish got surgery, the hospital policy was not allowing minors up because it was big surgery, you know, not to see it.
Yeah.
She fought to get up and they finally relented and she fought to get up to see her. So we're like, you know, very, dude, she's always been an equal part of the discussion. Cause I like you hate when people talk to kids like kids. Did I make a mistake?
Well, it's not my place to say, and every family is different. Every child is different. And just to be clear, I hate when people, I think it's appropriate to talk to kids like they're kids in a developmentally appropriate way. I just hate when they baby talk, you know, like, are you doing? You know, but that's different than sharing, you know, with a younger child, sharing absolutely every detail.
Right.
I think I'm not going to say what you did was wrong. I'm not here to criticize other people's choices. I never would do that, even with my clients. Every family is different. The way that your family is structured is going to be different. Me personally, if I had a child that was that age, I probably wouldn't share every detail with them. But that's my family and that's me, you know? So, I mean, you know her better than anybody. So, you know, and also it's so important in these times of hardship to remember we do the best with the information that we have. You know, you weren't able to go and read books about talking about hard subjects with children because you were in the middle of a crisis. You did the best you could with the information you had in the moment. And that's all we can ever do.
You think that you've gone through the hardest part with your kids so far, Wait till they start driving.
No, I don't think that I got through the hardest part.
Oh, okay. All right.
I am absolutely terrified of teenagers. It wasn't fun when I was a teenager, and I can't imagine with social media that it's going to be any better when my kids are teenagers. I'm just really happy that I have two boys. I'm never going to have a teenage girl because that would really scare me.
I'm happy I have a teenage daughter, because if I had a boy, that would scare me, because I know. It's funny. It's because you know what a teenage daughter is. So you're like, I don't want any.
Well, I feel very privileged to be able to raise two men, you know, and have them be respectful and, you know, feminists and, you know, be just the way that I want them, just the kind of men that I would want in my life, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're given the children that we should have. And I'm very, very happy that I have two boys. That's what I want.
So my daughter just passed her driver's test 2 days ago.
I cannot imagine.
Oh, God.
The worry.
I go to Trish. I go, look, cancer was almost fun compared to seeing her drive away.
Oh my gosh. I know. And I live in Los Angeles. So I'm like, when my kids are able to drive, they're going to be able to get into the heart of Hollywood in 15 minutes.
Wow.
That freaks me out. Freaks me out because there's no buffer. There is no buffer between us and just a very, very crazy dense city.
Yeah,
so it's pretty scary. Yeah.
Captain Charlotte is a really cool project.
Thank you.
You're a really cool person. And I didn't know the extent of your journey, but now that I do, I respect you even more, because I've seen what that can do to you. And, you know, you're right. A lot of people get to that fork in the road and pick the unbound fork, and you didn't. So that's super admirable. And if mindset contributes to well-being, you're going to be well.
I hope that's right. Thank you.
I bet that is right. And thank you for enduring my my technical difficulties.
No problem.
And again, Captain Charlotte can be found anywhere.
The story of Captain Charlotte, yes.
Story of Captain Charlotte anywhere. And if we want to reach you, the best way to do it is Instagram or your email, which is storyofcaptaincharlotte@gmail.com.
Thestoryofcaptaincharlotte@gmail.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Terrific, man.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for doing this. And I'll email you. It'll be up in like 3 or 4 days, and I'll email you before it goes up.
Thank you so much.
You're really cool. Thank you.